Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 4th of November, 2020, and welcome to another episode of Reconstruction, the weekly podcast from the Construction Index. I'm David Taylor, editor of the Construction Index magazine, and with me to discuss the latest news and events is my colleague Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service at theconstructionindex.co.uk. Good morning, Phil. How are things going?
Morning, David. Well, okay, but we are heading for another national lockdown tomorrow as we speak, or actually midnight tonight.
Yes.
So I have one plan today, which is to get down the pub at 6 o'clock, or possibly even earlier, and help the rest of the village try and get rid of all that beer that we don't want to be thrown away.
Indeed, yes. That's a very serious problem. But this lockdown for the construction industry probably isn't going to be as bad as the first one, because everything just stopped dead, didn't it, when Boris Johnson announced the lockdown in March. And it took a while for the construction industry to get back on its feet again. But it's come back quite strongly, and we've got our stuff sorted out now. We know what we're doing, don't we?
Yeah, well, we had, if you remember last time, there was all this social media campaign, shut the sites, and the sites
didn't shut.
Everyone was saying, well, why have they not stopped working? And, you know, some things didn't stop working, but a lot did. House building sites shut for pretty much all of April, I think, and some for even longer. And even the sites which were able to continue during the lockdown had to shut temporarily to reorganise and put up new signage and sort out how to operate with COVID-compliant policies and social distancing and everything. So there was a lot of disruption and hiatus. A lot of the building materials producers and outlets shut their doors, and there was disruption to all sorts of supply of materials and supply of people. And even though construction was able to continue theoretically during lockdown, there was this big interruption, which we won't have this time, all being well. We now know how to operate in a COVID friendly way, and that should just continue.
Despite all the mixed messages we keep getting from the experts and the government particularly, it's almost become second nature now, hasn't it? The wearing of masks, the social distancing, the washing of hands, disinfecting, all that sort of stuff. We almost do it without thinking now. At least I find I do. You know, when I go out to the supermarket, I grab my my shopping bags, and I also grab my mask. It's just what you do, isn't it?
Well, thank you for not using the phrase "the new normal" there, David. But I know that's what you're getting.
I wouldn't be heard. No, I wouldn't use that. I wouldn't use that phrase. It's overused. Well overused.
I don't want to overstate how relaxed the construction industry should be about the national lockdown. No. It's not going to be that straightforward, because there are still, anything that impacts on the national economy impacts on the construction industry.
Yes, of course.
So there will be, so long as this damn thing continues, there will be impact on demand for construction, particularly sort of commercial construction, and jobs will still be laid off. There have been various surveys published recently by, I think Build UK did one, and Construction Industry Training Board put out their latest skills network forecasts and these sort of things. I mean, these are only surveys and forecasts which are indicators but aren't fact, if you know what I mean. These things haven't happened, but there's still a lot of particularly lower down supply chain subcontractors and self-employed contractors. There's more job losses, there's more pain to come. But just like, I don't know if you remember, at the beginning of the year, before all this COVID thing happened, after the election of the new government last year and the end of what do we call it when the government was spending no money under the Cameron Osborne years? And Boris came in and said, austerity years, that's it. And Boris came in and said, it's spend, spend, spend.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to build back, you know, build, build, build.
Yeah.
And COVID obviously put a dampener on that for a while. But now it's even more important to build, 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 because I think while so many parts of the economy are going to be or continue to be even more crippled by the lockdown and the COVID restrictions and the economic turmoil, construction industry by and large, we're saying, by and large, is going to keep going, which makes its relative importance to the national economy that much greater.
Construction does seem to have fared a lot better than other sectors. I mean, obviously, the hospitality sector is the one that we keep hearing about. And they're the ones who are going to be hit really hard this time because, you know, nobody can go to the pub, as you've rightly pointed out. And I know that a lot of pubs, restaurants, bars, that kind of thing, were really struggling to get back to normal working. I mean, their site operational procedures have been heavily curtailed. My local pub, I don't know if it's the same with yours, you can't go inside unless you've pre-booked, basically, and you have to sit at a table. You can't stand at the bar. So although life was getting back to normal for them, it was far from normal. I think in construction, we found it much easier to actually operate effectively under the lockdown as it eased. Certainly, I think that we've coped with it pretty well, and I think that other sectors of the industry, hospitality being the main one, they're going to find it a lot harder. So yeah, it's pretty grim for everybody. Although we should be grateful that construction perhaps is affected less than others.
Well, more good news or encouraging news this morning. Morgan Sindall put out a trading statement basically saying that while, you know, back in August when they issued their half year results, they were saying, we're going to make a pre-tax profit for the year of 2020, region of 50 to 60 million, which is could be a lot worse. But things are so uncertain, they were saying just a few weeks ago in August, that we're not going to be paying an interim dividend, or at least we're not yet going to, you know, we're going to put that on hold. And this morning they're saying, actually, it's all picked up. Things are looking pretty good. Momentum has gathered. Work's still flowing through in a strong cash position. And so we can now tell our shareholders that they will get an interim dividend, 21p a share, in line with what they had last year, half year.
I bet they weren't expecting that.
Well, I don't think shareholders have been expecting anything for year, to be honest. So the fact that they feel confident enough to say, as you were, chaps, carry on, you know, and here's some gravy for shareholders, is not just good news for Morgan Sindall shareholders. I think it's good news for construction industry as a whole and for the economy as a whole. It's a good sign.
It is. Well, I wonder, it'd be interesting to see if any of the other major contractors have similarly good news when they report their half-year results. Who's next? Do you know who's going to be revealing their half-year results next?
Oh, don't ask me those questions. I only know what's happening in 5 minutes' time. I only remember that it's happened 10 minutes after it's finished happening.
I think now's a good time to introduce our special guest for this week. He is Richard Dolman, co-founder, owner and director of AR Demolition, headquartered in Market Bosworth, Leicestershire. And Richard's been in the news recently because of his adoption of, let us say, unorthodox techniques on a contract at a Leicestershire quarry. Welcome to Reconstruction, Richard. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we get down to the main topic of conversation, Phil has pointed out to me that it's quite appropriate that today we should be discussing how to blow things up or blow things down, because tomorrow is the 415th anniversary of Britain's most famous failed demolition job. So, Richard, where did Guy Fawkes go wrong?
I was wondering what that was then. Where did he go wrong indeed? I'm not so sure even if he did succeed in what he's trying to do, whether it would have done much of a job, if I'm honest.
It didn't go off, did it? I mean, they had to cancel the contract, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the legal battle went.
Well, yeah, I think it ended with a hanging, a drawing and a quartering, didn't it? Anyway, let's talk about AR Demolition and what you've been up to recently, because recently the latest piece of news was, first of all, before we get into the techniques that you've been using, tell us what you're up to at Croft Quarry. It's an aggregate industries granite quarry in Leicestershire, and there's been a lot of demolition going there. So just give us a quick rundown of what you're up to over there.
Yeah, so they've basically exhausted their current reserves, and they're looking at potential various different potential options to carry on with the site. There are still other reserves that are available, but they sit mm-hmm. underneath all of the current processing plant, etc. And they're looking at various recycling things, and they're looking at all sorts of angles at what's best to, you know, utilize the facility for. But none of them include the current plant and machinery on there, because it's either in the way or won't be suitable for what they want to carry on doing there. So it basically all has to go.
All of it?
Yeah. Well, 90% of it.
And right, a lot of it's underground, so it's, as well, isn't it? You're pulling stuff out from underground as well, I think, aren't you?
There are some small older sections underground, some tunnels that got conveyors and things in. Yeah, we've removed all of the infrastructure out of those.
Right, okay. Now, you recently demolished quite a large building there. I think, was it a screen house? I don't know what a screen house is. Well, I imagine it's a house that contains the screening equipment. But you had to... you had to demolish that, which you did using an explosive technique, but it wasn't the sort of techniques that that we're used to seeing. Because normally, if I'm correct, when you use explosive demolition, you weaken the structure first, don't you? And then you just use a minimum amount of explosive just to finish the job and bring it down. But you didn't do that. You did something else, and something which I think people don't normally do in construction.
Yeah, indeed. And explosive demolition is, from how I see it, always used as the straw to break the camel's back. And where I've often had a problem in my own mind is, albeit there's a lot of clever engineers and things about, is, you know, a structure's designed to stand up, and pre-weakening the structure with people in it, etc., just does not make sense to me in any way, shape or form. And, you know, how do you account for things happening and pre-weakening the structure to the point of it's nearly there, and then finish it off with some explosives. It has never sat comfortably with me. And when I came across this technology, I thought, what a great technology, and wanted to give it a go.
What is the technology? Just give us an outline and tell us how you found out about it.
So, sadly, I found out about it post the incident at Didcot. And unfortunately, my industry lives in a world of, we've always done it like that, so we'll continue to do it like that, and very rarely looks at new technology.
Could I just interrupt for a minute? For not everyone listening may be familiar with what happened at Didcot. This is an incident in February 2016 where a boiler house at the old power station was being brought down, and they were weakening it prior to explosion, I guess, as you're talking about, and it came down too early, didn't it? That's what happened at Didcot, I think.
Yeah, so all we know at this stage, and you could set me off on another tangent with that, is because we've still not learnt anything from it, but all we know at this stage is it collapsed during the preparation. And anyway, there was a portion left up, and the site owners stumbled across or researched and found a gentleman that had got technology for bringing structures down or cutting steel that wasn't pre-wheatened. And they brought this guy in, and he successfully did it. And he also successfully did it robotically, which was another interesting point. And our industry seemed to just not take too much interest of Olford Technologies, but I did. And I, for a long time, I've chatted with him and talked with him and with Roland from Olford, and I spotted this opportunity and thought, I want to try that technology, and away we went. And with zero pre-weakening, we brought the structure down.
That is amazing. What amazes me is that, having successfully used it in the wake of the Didcot disaster to bring down the rest of the structure, people apparently didn't really notice what was going on, except people apart from you, perhaps. And also the fact that the techniques that this company, Olford Technologies, I think they're based in Hampshire, aren't they? A specialist company. We could talk about them a little bit in a while. But they've been using these techniques, they've been developing them themselves, and they've been using them in a sort of a military context, haven't they, for quite a long time. So the technology was out there already, and people just hadn't used it in demolition.
The technology's been there for a long time. And as I say, our industry just seems to quite often not be too interested in looking at new ways of doing things. But now it's gaining momentum. I mean, it wouldn't be fair for me to say that I'm the only one using it, and that Alfreds are currently doing a large project in Australia.
Right.
I hope it does gain momentum, because it appears to be, or I believe it is, an extremely safe way of using explosives as a tool in our industry.
What's clever about it? I mean, you're not just chucking in more explosives, aren't you? It seems to me that, you know, you could just put in so much more explosive and bring anything down, but it's more subtle than that, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to be a lot more subtle, because you're looking for a balance of not causing too much disruption with things like what we call air over pressure, or even the noise of an explosion. What's clever is that Alfred Technologies have got a facility where they test their developments, and they've been able to develop not only charges that will cut steel up to 100 mil thick, 4 inches thick, but they've also worked on ways of dislodging the steel once cut, because there's two stages. There's cut the steel, and then, so if you imagine a table on its four legs, you could cut a leg and the weight of the table will hold the table on the leg. You then need to take the leg out.
So it's called cut and kick, isn't it, this technique?
Yeah, that's right. Whereas what our industry was traditionally doing was doing all of the cutting, or the majority of the cutting, before the kicking. And the way that Alfreds have designed it, it all works in harmony together.
Because, I mean, Alfred Technologies was launched by Dr. Sidney Alfred, who's quite a character, isn't he? I mean, he's getting on now. I mean, but he's still going. I think he's in his 80s. I might be wrong. He's been fascinated with pyrotechnics since he was a boy, because he's got if you want to know more, by the way, there's plenty on Wikipedia about Dr. Sidney Alfred. But
it's a good read, that, isn't it? I thought
it is. It is a very good read. But he used something called shaped charges, which are quite well known in military circles for armor piercing warheads and stuff like that. You actually focus the explosive energy on a very narrow point, and that's what actually cuts through the steel. You can cut through very thick, as Richard says, you know, 4 inches of steel. You can just cut straight through that. It doesn't just blow it to pieces, it literally cuts it. So this technology has been used for blowing up tanks and various other military applications for an awfully long time. It just seems that it's taken a long time to filter down to the construction industry. But it is obviously a very efficient way of getting through steel with explosives. And the video of your job at Croft Quarry is quite impressive, because that thing just comes straight down, doesn't it?
Yeah, we were delighted with the result. We had a bit of development up to that point, but you know, as our industry is, it's about learning and development. But it works incredibly well, and like that structure didn't need to go in under any pre-weakening whatsoever. And we had air over pressure monitors in situ, and we had set up, and we also had noise monitors, and everything was below any sort of legislative limits.
All right, excellent. Would the technique work just as well with a reinforced concrete structure, or would that require a different technique?
So Alfred are working with concrete, because the big problem with concrete, again, is this pre-weakening involved, but also with concrete, if you place an explosive at the minute, you need to get the explosives inside of the concrete, which means a lot of drilling, a lot of drilling, hand-arm vibration, lots of preparation time. And Alfred have been working on various techniques where you can just place explosives on the concrete. And that's been born out of the technology they have for breaching into structures that may be being held by a terrorist, where they just put something on a wall, blast it, and it knocks a
hole in the wall.
Size hole in the wall.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, so that's really good news. I mean, obviously, it's a major step forward in terms of health and safety. Presumably, it's also more efficient, isn't it? Because it must be quicker.
Yeah, well, there's the preparation time's less, a lot less. It's a win-win all round. It's quicker. And again, none of the pre-weakening, which I can't emphasise enough. It just feels a whole good win. And also, interestingly, the bit to pick up, because the Alfreds, a lot of them are military-based, it is an absolute pleasure to watch them work on site. because of the level of, they work differently. They, you know, they're not against practice something, dress rehearse something, which, you know, I love that sort of thing. Mm. And they drill themselves like a finely oiled machine.
Military precision, I think the phrase is, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. Yeah, yeah.
I can see you mentioned the safety benefits, the efficiency and everything. And obviously, you can't put a price on safety. Are there economic? Is it cheaper or is it more expensive? Or is it, at the end of the day, is it about the same sort of cost?
My gut feel is it's difficult to fully tell because every project's different. But I think it's in line. I don't think it's expensive. I don't think it's a lot cheaper when you put together the whole big picture, the time savings and the, you know, the management savings around that. I don't think there's a lot in it.
But that's just one story, isn't it? I mean, obviously, I think that's probably the most interesting side of things. And certainly from the point of view of the construction industry, it's something which people need to take on board. But you also did something earlier this year, which was almost like the other side of the coin, but equally fascinating. You actually went back in time and used ancient technology to do something because it was the most appropriate technique. And that was using a steam engine to, I think it was to haul up parts of an old conveyor. Is that right?
Yeah, indeed. I looked at this structure and I thought the best way to bring that from where it is to winch it up in pieces. And then the thought process started about the best kit to use for the job.
And why didn't you just use a diesel-powered winch or something like that? Why did you go for we ought to talk about the machine. I can't remember what it was called. Avis, was it called, Phil?
Avis. I've got some information in front of me that we ran a piece on our website back in May, 15th
we
of
did,
May.
We did, didn't we?
A 1918 J&H McLaren steam engine. And it was owned by, isn't it, one of your employees, one of the people in your crew, his father had renovated it or something? Is that the story?
Yeah, so Rich Holt is a good friend of mine that works in AR, and he runs our fabrication shop. And I want to touch on Rich a little bit because he genuinely blows my mind. He's a young, very young man, just in his 30s. That he's so passionate about what he does in the way of fabrication and his imagination, and the things he produces are just amazing. And he's almost like a step back in time with the way he works, with just watching and learning, and he's largely self-taught. And he's learnt a lot of old techniques and new techniques. And his family and his father, but his whole family have got a passion for steam. And yes, they own Avis, the engine which they bought getting towards 10 years ago now, which they've done some restoration work and they got me interested in steam. And so here we are today.
So why was a steam engine the optimum solution in this case?
So I looked at hiring in a winch truck and the cost was a lot of money. And then my mind was just whirring over and I thought, you know, I've got a winch in our armoury with my friend's engine. At the same time, Rich was helping us restore an engine as well, another McLaren engine. And it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek to start with. I thought, I know she'll be able to do it. Why not? You know, I just kept thinking, why not? And so I met in a progress meeting with the client. I said, look, I've got this idea and please don't throw me out of the meeting room until we've all discussed it and thought it through. And it landed amazingly well with Aggregate Industries. They said, well, if you can risk assess it properly and you can do it, then we agree. Why not? And it'd be nice to see the sort of technology back in Croft Quarry that probably helped Croft Quarry open and operate, you know, many years ago. And economically, it worked out a lot better as well.
Yeah, I bet it did. And there are some fantastic pictures as well. I mean, the juxtaposition of this 102-year-old steam traction engine, which is actually a marvellous-looking machine. It's in beautiful condition, next to one of your big, heavy demolition excavators. It's quite a striking image. So that was, I thought, Well, we talked about this on a previous podcast, didn't we, Phil? Because it just really caught our imagination. It just seemed like such a good story. But the thing I think that this illustrates is a willingness to consider, I think the cliche is think outside the box. You mentioned earlier at the beginning of our conversation that the industry has a tendency to say, oh, no, we don't do it like that. We do it like this, and just stick to the tried and tested techniques. And when there's a solution staring you in the face that's actually better than, you know, the way everybody else would normally do it, then, you know, have the courage of your convictions and take it. And it's clearly worked out for you twice so far this year, because on both occasions, this has proved to be the optimum solution, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And dare I say, in particular with Avis, we had some really good fun on the way. And better than that, I should touch on, the real upside is during her working day, there was a large beef joint and a large gammon joint in her smoke box. I'm not joking either. The reward at the end of the day was all of the team involved and the client all enjoyed fresh pork, gammon, and beef cobs.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
Cooks over about 8 hours in the engine and it's as good as it gets.
Yeah, I bet it is. Fantastic. Yeah, well, there's a bonus. But I did allude earlier to another story, which I think ran last year, towards the end of last year, in fact. You were quite outspoken about the use of scaffolding in demolition. And in fact, this goes back to your comments about pre-weakening. It's all about health and safety and the appropriate use of technology. And our headline was that you should think twice before using scaffolding to shroud buildings under demolition. And of course, a lot of the time when you're demolishing a building, especially in a built-up area, you need to prevent, you know, debris and dust and goodness knows what else leaving the site and causing damage or even injury to passers-by. And you have also developed a technique of your own, haven't you, to replace the use of scaffolding as a sort of a debris shield. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so indeed, scaffolding is probably the other one I've looked at for years and struggled to understand when I see a structure being demolished with a huge demolition rig and all that's in between the structure and the public or a public space is a scaffold. Mm. And I've just never quite understood, and I use the example of to people and saying, well, look, here we are demolishing a structure. While we're demolishing that, would you stand next to it with your, you know, your family, and hope for the best? And obviously the answer is no. And then I say to them, well, if I put a 1.2 meter wide scaffold up against a structure with some sheeting on it, so you can't really see what's going on at the back of it, would you stand there? And they say, well, yeah, we probably would, because we don't know what's the other side of it. And there is no way as a scaffold structurally sound to, well, a flying brick could come through the monoflex, never mind the structure itself. And what I should make really clear, I think there was a little bit of misunderstanding with my article last year, is I think putting a building in scaffold and reverse constructing the building is acceptable. You know, that's because you're doing the same thing as building it. That's great, you know, all done correctly. But I think a lot of the blame comes with clients due to forever tightening restrictions on our industry, you know, saying we want you basically to do a Paul Daniels magic trick on that building. Now you see it, now you don't. And don't interrupt with the public's way of life. You know, you can't close that footpath or you can't close that highway. And I think sometimes there needs to be a grown-up conversation with the client and say, for us to do the job safely, we need a good exclusion zone. Mm-hmm. But then if you just simply can't have that type of exclusion zone, we shouldn't be taking a risk with just a scaffold against a structure. And so I came up with the Big Blue, as it's affectionately known as, and the debris protection frame.
So what is that? What does that comprise?
So it's just a very industrial frame that has a lot of Kentledge ballast in the bottom of it. And and we've got a lot of science engineering to prove that it can withstand what it can withstand in the way of... So where it comes into its own, I sat with a customer once and said, look, you've requested that we wrap this building in a scaffold, but if you look at it closely, will the scaffold stop flying debris? Probably not. Will it stop a collapse? Definitely not. Hmm. Will it stop dust? Yes, brilliantly. But even the dust that settles on the scaffold, when you take the scaffolding down, what happens to it? It goes where it was going to go anyway.
Yeah.
So I said, I've come up with this idea that's industrial, it's strong, it takes a little bit more space, it will stop flying debris, and it will stop a partial collapse. It's not brilliant with dust, but we can put measures around that to complement it. And the client, in all fairness, were really receptive and said, yeah, let's do it. And we did, and it was a success.
How many times have you used it so far?
We've used it about 4 times now. Yeah, it's. I always push for an exclusion zone over any sort of protection or control measure.
Right.
Then if you can't have the exclusion zone, then what else can we do?
So this the system, when you had the idea, did you manufacture it in-house, or did you get somebody else to design and manufacture it for you?
So I cigarette packet drew it out of my mind, and then I took it to an engineer to put some calculations to it and draw fabrication drawings. Mm-hmm. And then Rich, who we mentioned already, our fabricator, he built it all. And it's all modular. Yeah. It flat packs. It's like an IKEA piece of furniture. It flat packs down. We can transport it. We put it together. And
I'm sure it's a bit better than that, isn't it?
Hope the instructions are better anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'd like to think that it stays together well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's the frame? I understand, you know, is steel and it's very robust. What about the screen itself? What's that made of?
So the screen itself is made of 50 millimeter timber.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it's very thick. So and there's a lot of steel support at the back of it as well.
Simple idea, but effective.
Yeah, it appears so. And again, I just think it's born out of just thinking a little bit differently. And I should point out, because I am critical of the demolition industry for not trying new things. But I think a lot of the way I think is probably because I'm new. Well, I'm not second generation to the demolition industry. I've never worked for another demolition company. I developed it from, I started out, I bought a JCB digger and I gradually developed into a demolition contractor, and I'm completely self-taught.
Right.
And I think a lot of the time that stood me in good stead, because I've just thought things out from scratch. I've accidentally come up with something different.
So you haven't sort of inherited any sort of fixed ideas. You've always started from first principles.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's just naturally just made me think differently.
It's easy to see why, though, the demolition industry should be so conservative, because it's one of those industries where if something does go wrong, it generally doesn't go a little bit wrong or slightly wrong. It can go badly wrong all too quickly in a way that maybe certain other sectors of the industry, you know, things might not be quite so catastrophic when you screw up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And also, I think a big thing around that, and, you know, we've all had that moment where we've taken a sharp intake of breath and all gone, God, that was close, you know, me included. And I wish we could learn to be a bit more open with, I mean, I did launch a website a few years ago that wasn't AR branded, and I intend to redo it because it didn't go as well as I expected. And, you know, I didn't get time to promote it properly. But, you know, lessons learned for them. We need to learn to be a lot like the aero industry. You know, I believe the minute that Rolls-Royce engines have an issue, the first people they let know is their direct competition, General Electric. And I wish we could be the same. We've all got to accept that we have issues, and we've got to learn to share them. And if we do that, we'll learn from them.
The International Powered Access Federation set up something based on the pilots near miss reporting scheme, where with powered access platforms, there are an awful lot of near misses that go unreported there. And they have an anonymous reporting system through the trade association, so it's all neutral and not sort of commercial advantage thought or disadvantage thought. And I think that's a big help for sharing knowledge and experience.
Yeah, that's exactly the same principle that we came up with probably 3, maybe 4 years ago now, and I intend to relaunch it, but I want to relaunch it through the Institute of Demolition Engineers this time instead of, you know, just a new thing. I'll have to get the agreement from the Institute, but I just think these things are brilliant. And as I think we need to get to a world where people are almost praised, if you like, for saying, look, we've learned from this, and this is, we've learned from this, and we, you know, we hope that somebody else can learn from it and it not happen again. And I think that's critical to our industry.
We better let you get on and price up and measure up your next job, which I'm sure you're just on your way to now, Richard. But thank you very much for joining David and I on our podcast.
No, and thank you. Nice to meet you all.
Well, thank you very much to Richard Dolman there from AR Demolition. That's a fascinating conversation. And if you've got a steam engine, we mentioned this before, that you're planning on using in a construction project, we want to hear about it, don't we, David?
We do indeed. Any sort of engine, really. I mean, even a jet engine, that'd be interesting.
And we're also interested in new innovations, not just old, reusing old ones.
Yes.
And if you want to send us an email, we are contactable by podcast at theconstructionindex.co.uk. You can see more of what we've been talking about at theconstructionindex.co.uk. But for this week, as we embark on the second national lockdown, stay indoors, don't eat out, wash your hands, face masks, biscuits. What are we supposed to say?
Keep calm and carry on, I think they say, don't they?
Keep well, carry on.
Okay.
See you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk.